Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Actually, I have seen Tebow play. They used to play at the rec center all the time. Tebow might want to stick to football.
You are locked on Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Fantrax and Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. It's another of the season preview podcasts today. We've had a few of these go out already. I hope you guys are listening to them and enjoying them. Today, we're heading to Houston. We're going to be looking at the Mike D'Antoni-led Houston Rockets. And to discuss the Houston Rockets, I'm joined by Ben DuBose of the Locked On Rockets podcast. Ben, how are you?
Going pretty good. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. It's good to have you on. As I said, you are the host of the Locked On Rockets podcast. But before we get into talking too much Rockets, let's give the podcast a plug. What have you got coming up on the show? What have you had recently? And any of your other work that people might want to check out?
Yeah, absolutely. For those who don't know me, I'm Ben DuBose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. We've had quite a few shows lately. The last couple I can think of, we had an interesting show last week on kind of the inside scoop on the NBA's media credentialing process. It's a little bit of a slow time of year for news as far as NBA teams, especially the Rockets, are concerned. A lot of these teams are fairly ready to go for training camp, which starts in 2.5 weeks. So I thought it was a good period to kind of, take a step back and do some off-the-wall things. So we did that media credentialing podcast. We had a podcast yesterday about the recent rumor of Carl Landry potentially coming to the Rockets. And then later this week, I'm going to have another kind of off-the-wall podcast about Rockets fandom, and they have a group of diehards called the Red Rowdies, and so we're going to have one of the super fans on there and basically go through the life of an NBA super fan. So, again, it's a slow period, so we're doing a little bit of different things over at Locked On Rockets. So if you haven't found this yet, definitely encourage you to stop by, and I think we'll have some pretty good content for you.
Yeah, I listen to the podcast. I don't listen to every episode because I can't listen to every single episode across the network, but I do listen to the majority of your ones, and there's been some really good stuff on there. So I do encourage people to check that out. We're going to be talking about the Rockets. We're going to be talking about their players, their roster, and how it all impacts from a fantasy point of view. So
let's get to it.
All right. The first question I think that everyone has got on their mind is Mike D'Antoni. So Mike D'Antoni comes across. We know D'Antoni's history. We know him in Phoenix. We know him in New York. We know him in Los Angeles. That he's always been a fantasy-friendly coach. He increases the pace of teams. He increases their offensive output. He brings guys who, let's be honest, half the time they shouldn't be really playing significant roles in the NBA. You can think back to his last stop in Los Angeles, where guys like Ryan Kelly and Jody Meeks were fantasy mainstays because of D'Antoni. And D'Antoni left, and those guys withered and disappeared. So Mike D'Antoni's in Houston, who is a player that he brings from nowhere to be a key part of what he does with this team.
From nowhere is a little bit of a stretch. First guy that comes to mind to me is Donatas Mata-Yunas, assuming he stays. And of course, he's a restricted free agent, has not re-signed yet. And when you look at the Rockets roster, a lot of people, especially fantasy-wise, are not going to be that high on him, because they have Ryan Anderson at power forward. They paid him $80 million, so of course he's going to play. And then you have Clint Capella, who's going to be your starter at center, and they signed Nene to back him up. So a lot of people just look at Mata-Yunas, even if he resigns, and they see basically a 15-minute-per-game backup power forward. And, to start the year, that might be true. However, to me, he has the skill set of what Mike D'Antoni likes in his bigs in terms of his ability to move the ball, space the floor, shoot from distance, a very high IQ player. And, when you look at that Rockets front court, it's deep in terms of names, but there are legitimate questions with Ryan Anderson and Nene. Both have a fairly extensive injury history and just an ability to get nicks and dings here and there. Clint Capella, there's a lot of promise with Capella, but he's never played more than 19 minutes a game in the NBA. So until he actually plays 30, 32 minutes, you know, it's tough to assume that. So I would say at some point this year, assuming Monty Unis returns, he's going to get a shot. And I think once he starts to get a shot, to me, he strikes me as the kind of guy that D'Antoni is, he profiles as a Mike D'Antoni big. The other guy that stands out to me, Sam Dekker. I think Sam Dekker's kind of fallen off the radar for a lot of NBA fans. First-round pick in the 2015 NBA draft, who basically never played a year ago because he had back trouble, ended up having back surgery. But he had a great summer league. He's a very high IQ player. He moves the ball. He attacks. He can shoot the three. And when you look at the Rockets, behind their starters, behind James Harden and behind Trevor Ariza, that backup small forward spot, no one is particularly intrigued by Corey Brewer. They would like to replace him. It's just a matter of, you know, who can fill that role. Because the thing with Brewer, he just does not shoot well enough for Mike D'Antoni's offense, or quite frankly, most offenses in the modern NBA. KJ McDaniels is an option too, but McDaniels is a guy who can't shoot. It's tough to see that as a wing in a Mike D'Antoni system. So I think there's a real shot for Dekker to earn some minutes. I know they'd like to keep Trevor Ariza's minutes down. Ariza's defense kind of fell off the map last year, and a big part, they felt like he was overused. So to start the year, I think you could see Dekker playing 15 to 20 minutes a game if he wins that backup small forward spot. And then, you know, from there, all it takes is one injury, and all of a sudden, he can be one of those guys, you know, like a Jody Meeks that you pointed out, someone who just comes off the radar that no one saw coming.
Yeah, Dekker's the guy that I had listed for this, because over at Basketball Monster, we've asked these same questions to myself and Kyle and Matt over there, and Dekker was the name that I put out there because I thought he looked dominant in Summer League. I know it's Summer League, but as a second-year player who didn't play really at all, I think he played 6 minutes in the NBA and he played six games in the D-League, something very, very low like that. He came out and he should look dominant, and he just looked bigger, he looked faster, he looked stronger, he looked better than basically everyone on the court when he was playing. And you talk about, you know, Brewer was horrendous last season. He wasn't a rotation-level player. And D'Antoni could just as easily go, well, sorry, Corey, like, you're just not playing anymore. He's just not that sort of player anymore. So I can easily see Dekker doing that. And you mentioned that Ariza's minutes, you know, more likely, he's an older guy. That I don't think people realize how old Ariza is. I think he's 31 or 32 now.
He's 31, but he's an older 31 because he's got a lot of mileage. He's had a lot of deep playoff runs.
Yep. And so, and he played a lot of minutes, you know, as well.
Yeah, exactly. So he's a guy, you know, do I think Ariza's over the hill? Not necessarily, but I think he's a guy, if you want to get the best out of him defensively, you probably need to limit him to, I'd say, 28 to 30 minutes a game. You know, I'd say the days, if you're going to play Trevor Ariza 38 to 40 minutes a night, you're going to get diminishing returns, which is what they got from him last year.
So Ariza, you'll see in fantasy situations that he's ranked pretty high from last season, and people got a lot of high hopes on him. But a lot of that is based on the fact that he doesn't turn the ball over and that he gets a lot of minutes. So if what Ben's saying is something that D'Antoni's going to be looking at and cutting his minutes down, that it's not worth looking at Ariza in terms of being a top 50 sort of pick, because he has been that guy over the last three seasons, a top 40, top 50 sort of player. He started off last season poorly from a statistical point of view, but then he started hitting a lot of threes and getting a lot of steals as the season progressed. But at his age, again, decline starts to come, and that comes in the form of not playing as many minutes and not being as active defensively and not hitting your shots with the same level and fatigue coming in and wearing down and all this sort of stuff. So there is a bit of risk associated with Trevor Ariza, and for all those points that you brought up, plus the fact that Dekker could jump up, and then there is McDaniels, but I was a big McDaniels fan, but I'm out on him now. I don't really ever see it happening with him.
Yeah, I would like to see it happen with McDaniels, but it's a stretch. People make it seem a lot simpler than it is. Obviously, the Rockets went after Kent Bazemore in free agency, so they would like to have a younger 3-and-D option, you know, someone that brings some of Ariza's skills to the table. But you know, you can't just find a dynamic defender and then just assume that they're going to figure it out enough to be viable on the offensive end of the floor. And clearly, this will be, they got McDaniels at the 2015 deadline. So this is going to be his third season with the Rockets. And of course, they've had needs for his skill set in that time, but they've never felt comfortable to give him significant run. So I think you're at a point, you know, you don't want to fully write him off, but it's fair to have real concerns at this point if he's ever going to pick it up enough offensively to be a real NBA rotation player.
Now, at the start of each show, Ben, I read out a quote, and I keep them anonymous because I want people to try and guess. Now, I spoke to you before the show and said, if you have any idea who said this quote, it's probably the most obscure one that I've put up. Have a guess. Who do you think that said that Tebow quote? A member of the current Houston Rockets that said that quote.
Yeah, I'm just going to guess. I remember seeing it on Twitter, or I thought I did. But I'm going to guess Corey Brewer only because Brewer was at the University of Florida at the same time Tebow was.
Exactly. So exactly. That's it.
Perfect.
Yep. Because he used to, that's the giveaway there is he used to play at the rec center all the time. They used to go down and see him. And Brewer was not all that flattering about Tebow's basketballing abilities. Stick to football.
Yeah. Of course, Tebow could, he could say some not so flattering things about Corey Brewer's NBA basketball abilities. I think we already discussed that.
We did. All right, Clint Capela. Well, we alluded to him a little bit earlier. At this point, he's got the starting role. Do you think he's a good fit for what D'Antoni does?
Yes, I think he's a good fit. The main thing I think you want with Mike D'Antoni bigs are guys who are coachable. I think the bigs that Mike D'Antoni has had trouble with in terms of getting to buy in are guys like Dwight Howard in L.A., Pau Gasol in L.A., those are bigs with very rigid styles. And when I look at Clint Capela, from what I've seen of 2 years, he doesn't so much have a style. He is very much a, he's a blank sheet that you can kind of mold a lot of different ways. He, of course, is strong in the pick and roll. He's a good shot blocker, not really a great rim protector yet. But I think he's enough of a willing mover on offense, someone that's good at setting screens, can play pick and roll, that yes, I think D'Antoni can work with him. And I think in the Rockets' ideal world, it'll be a perfect marriage. And you know what? He can play 30, 32 minutes and, be a double-double guy. What I worry about with Capela is the fouls. I talked that earlier. It's not so much the fit with D'Antoni. It's that the one thing with Capela throughout his career, he's had a tendency to get fouls in bunches. And on this team, it's not just looking at fouls in bunches. When you're starting Ryan Anderson at the four alongside him, you are going to have Capela, picking up the slack a little bit. So I worry about, his natural tendency to foul, and then you put him next to someone in Ryan Anderson that's not a good defender. Is that going to put too much responsibility on Capella's plate too early? And so I would say I'm optimistic, but I would not just pencil him in as a 30-plus minute per game guy, especially because, Nene, he played in the Olympics, played very well. A lot of the Rockets are very optimistic about him. I don't see him as a huge fantasy contributor because I think, really, Nene as a guy at this point in his career, you cap his minutes at about 24 per game. But if Capella's picking up cheap fouls, if he's getting in foul trouble, and Nene is as healthy and productive as he was in the Olympics, I could see them almost splitting the center minutes 24-24. And the downside to that fantasy-wise is that, both are okay, but neither is good enough to really be a true impact player.
Yeah, so we've got, at the moment, Capela projected for 28 minutes a game because of that risk associated with fouling, and we don't know what they're going to do with the Nene situation. Nene can't run 28 minutes. He can't play that sort of load, and he's not going to be able to play 82 games. He's not going to be able to play 70 games. He might struggle to play 60 games. So that allows Capela to do that. But he's athletic. He runs the floor well. He's a really good perimeter defender as well. So he can switch out onto guards and not be worried about getting destroyed like some other centers might be. He's got pretty quick feet, and he's athletic, getting up for oops and stuff off Harden passes and all that sort of stuff. But the foul problem is a concern. Now, Capela's free throws make it a case that in fantasy that you lose that category if you've got him on your team. There's no two ways about that. But if you're okay with that, then his value being a guy that can be an 11 rebounds player, a guy that gets over two blocks a game and scores 12 points and gets a steal a game and shoots 60% from the field, all that stuff, it gives you a top 20 type return. Now, you're never going to pick him inside the top 20 because you can get him later. Go ahead, Ben.
He's a guy. In the D-League, in practice, he shoots 60-plus percent. And his form is really pretty good. He's not a guy, Houston fans have become used to Dwight Howard the last few years. And, of course, Dwight, his form has all sorts of issues and inconsistencies. Capela is not a guy who is a textbook bad foul shooter. So there is some upside that maybe he puts it together the way he has in the D-League, and that maybe some of his problems have been combination of small sample and the pressure of playing. Last year was basically his rookie year because he played so sparingly in his first year with the Rockets. He was mostly in the D League. So there's optimism that he might get a little bit better, but I would say this is a big year for him on this front, because if you projected him at 28 minutes a game, I think that's fair. If he gets into that role and is, again, sub 50%, it's tough to see where he suddenly breaks out in terms of his free throw percentage if it's not this year.
Yeah, I just don't. Look, and you mentioned the D League. He played a whole season there in his rookie year and shot 60%. So it is possible, but there's obviously different pressures that come in the NBA. We've seen that with plenty of players that we hear all the time about Dwight's hitting 75% of his shots and Drummond's hitting 65% in practice and all this sort of stuff. It's just a different situation when you're out in the big league. Ryan Anderson came across. It was a pretty hefty contract, $20 million per season for 4 years. What do you see him? How does he fit in? We know the lack of defense. We know what he does offensively, but he's had his concerns. He's had injury worries. He's had a decline in his 3-point shooting. He was a guy that was a 40% guy, but the last 2 years he's been down at 36, which isn't bad. But when it's your bread and butter, when it's your calling card, and you've dropped the last two seasons, I'm a little bit concerned. Do you have any of these sort of concerns with Anderson?
A little bit. I'm more concerned about the injuries than the three point shooting. The last 2 years, you look at his role in New Orleans, his proportion of wide open threes definitely went down. The New Orleans injuries took a toll on him. Also, just between us, I was never a big fan of the role he was put in New Orleans. Now, I'm not blaming Monty Williams or anyone with the Pelicans, because I don't think you could start Ryan Anderson at power forward, because you would be forcing Anthony Davis as a full-time five, and that's not a workload that they want Davis to undertake at his age and with his body type. So given the roster composition, they kind of had to make Anderson your backup power forward and, your sixth man off the bench, more of your creator. For someone like Ryan, yes, he can create a little bit of his own offense, but I think where he shines is playing off of other people. And so I think having him in the starting lineup next to someone like James Harden, I think he's going to get a much better quality of shots. Where I think I'm more concerned about him is with his athleticism, as we talked about, the neck injury that takes a little bit of his explosiveness away. He's not finishing at the rim quite as well as before. Like I said, I think he'll still be a serviceable player next to James Harden, but is he going to be the guy that he once was? No, I think where he's seen some decline is in terms of his ability to create off the dribble. And I think it was more pronounced in New Orleans, because when you have someone like Anderson in that sixth man role, the gunner off the bench, then that makes him, it makes the importance of him creating off the dribble even more pronounced. At least the role he is going to be in Houston can mitigate it to an extent. Now, the thing about Ryan Anderson, yes, he'll make enough threes to be a viable fantasy option. Absolutely. However, I would guess that his minutes are capped at about 30, which somewhat limits his fantasy value for a couple of reasons. One, there are going to be some matchups where I think, especially to close games, they may go small ball with Ariza as your stretch four, and then Beverly, Gordon, and James Harden all playing as basically a three-guard backcourt all on the floor at the same time. So Anderson may not close some games due to his defense. And the other thing, as I said leading off this show, I think people forget just how good Denonis Mantiunas was 2 years ago when he was basically a starter with the Rockets. And when he was a starter, basically a 14-7 guy in 30 minutes with very quality defense. I'm not saying that I think Mantiunas is going to take over the starting spot or anything crazy. Obviously, Ryan Anderson paid $80 million. He's going to be your starter. But I think Mantiunas is good enough that if he's healthy, if he is, if he comes in the way the Rockets expect him to, that he can steal a few of Mantiunas' minutes, steal a few of Ryan Anderson's minutes because of his superior defense and his superior passing.
Yeah, look, all those things. And I'm a big Mantiunas fan. I'll talk about Mantiunas in just a second. Just with Anderson, he's last season, his combined assists, steals, and blocks were less than his three-pointers made. So, yeah, he gets a lot of threes. He'll score a bit, but he's a below-average rebounder for his position. He shoots a horrendous field goal percentage. So he's going to be, you talk about, you know, looking at James Harden and drafting him at the start of drafts. Oh, he's going to affect my field goal percentage. Well, Anderson is a bigger drain on field goal percentage than what Anderson is. Yeah, he's a good free throw shooter, but he doesn't get to the line very much. His main contribution is going to be points and threes and just nothing in the peripheral stats. So that causes him to get overdrafted in a lot of fantasy situations.
Yeah.
Plus, you bring up the downsides as well.
Yeah, now to be fair, I do think he'll get a higher quality of shots this year, so you might see the percentages tick up a little bit. But at this stage in his career, I certainly don't think it's going to be anything drastic. The other thing I'll say about Anderson, I think a lot of people have kind of misguided expectations of him based on the contract. Yes, he's getting paid $80 million, but I don't think Daryl Morey, you know, will tell you that he thinks Ryan Anderson is an $80 million player. He's someone that the Rockets had to sign based on the name impact, because of course, signing him, it, you know, it basically also greased the wheels to bring in Eric Gordon. It also, you know, was enough of an upgrade to convince James Harden to sign an extension. So it was to the point the Rockets had taken a lot of PR hits. When you look at the teams underachieving a year ago, they chose to let Dwight walk. They did not get either Kevin Durant or Al Horford. They kind of had a string of negative perceptions about them, and they needed something to kind of change that narrative. And so I think, you know, Daryl Morey would admit to you that, you know, not on the record, but off the record, that they overpaid Ryan Anderson some, but it's just something they had to do to bring in a couple of quality players and basically just start the turnaround, hopefully the rebirth of the Rockets as they start to kind of, you know, rebuild and retool around James Harden, and then hopefully bring in, you know, more free agents in the summer ahead.
We talk about Matsuyunas, and I really think he's a very underrated player. He was obviously hampered by that back problem all of last season. I thought he was clearly to me the better player than Terrence Jones.
Absolutely.
Never worked out for him because of the back. The Rockets have got 15 guys under contract at the moment without including Matsuyunas. So if he signs, which we don't know what is happening there, who misses out of these 15 guys that are signed at the moment?
That's a really tough question. Of course, I'm trying to think here.
I'll give you the guys that are potentially on the bubble here. So, you know, there's guys like Isaiah Taylor, Kyle Wilcher, like those guys that I'm not including them, but KJ McDaniels, Gary Payton, Pablo Prigioni, Montrezl Harrell, Corey Brewer, they're probably the bottom end of this roster.
Yeah. Well, I was going to start with Prigioni. He's a guy, of course, they brought him in for stability, but I think if someone else steps up in the backcourt, he, you know, Les Alexander, the owner of the Rockets, has shown a willingness to eat contracts if the Rockets have a viable alternative elsewhere. So just because someone has a contract, I don't think they're necessarily going to play. Harrell, yes, I think they'll hold on to. Isaiah Taylor, you know, he's an undrafted free agent. That's another guy, yes, they could absolutely let go of him. I would look at Isaiah Taylor and Pablo Prigioni, you know, basically the back end of the backcourt, because I think the Rockets, assuming good health, the vast majority of the guard minutes are going to go to Harden, Eric Gordon, and Pat Beverly. So, and then you're going to have spot minutes potential from Corey Brewer, KJ McDaniels, even Sam Decker at the two from time to time. So really, you just need one backup point guard. You know, a lot of people fixate on the depth chart. But yeah, I would say the guards, Taylor and Prigioni, are, you know, if you need a cut, that's where I think it would come from.
I wasn't even including Taylor in the 15 guys. Like, Prigioni is probably the 15th guy on that roster. So
And then
Gary Payton's the other one. But I think Payton makes the final roster, do you?
He's got a shot. Now, the thing with Payton is that he had the hernia surgery. They were very high on him. He did not play much in summer league. So, assuming he's healthy, I think he's got a shot. I do know they were very optimistic on him going into summer league and then the unfortunate injury. But I would look to the backcourt is where, you know, Prigioni's most vulnerable to me.
The NBA draft, the Rockets didn't have a first-round pick. They gave that up as part of the Ty Lawson deal that turned into one Hernan Gomez for the Denver Nuggets, but they did have two second-rounders. One of them was Joe Chi, the Chinese big man who's not coming over this season. He's a lot of questions about his age. He's quite a thin player. He dominated Chinese league, but that's not all that hard at times. You know, there's a big talent disparity over there, and he scored a lot. He got a lot of rebounds, but I'm not sure how that translates to the NBA. Look, his numbers could translate very well, but we're not seeing him this year, so let's not focus on him. Let's look at Chinana Onwuaku, the center from Louisville, who the Rockets picked with pick 37. That we've talked about the Rockets center position. There's guys there. There's Nene, there's Capella, there's potentially Motti Yunus, but there's no real standout guy there. What do you think about Onwuaku in terms of his future potential and his ability to carve out a role as early as this season?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's this season, because I think he's a guy who is a center only in today's NBA. And if Clint Capella and Nene are able to play, there's not going to be much of a role there. Of course, you made a point earlier about Nene's tendency to get injuries. If he does, he absolutely could step up. The interesting thing about Onwuaku, he's, of course, the analytics models love him, but he's basically the complete opposite of Montrezl Harrell. And it's funny because both are bigs from Louisville, but Harrell's someone who they brought in last year, a very offense-minded big, your classic explosive guy. He moves well without the ball on offense, but the question is if he's ever going to be smart enough on the defensive end to get it and stick at the NBA level. Onwuaku's someone they think that he could play that he could play this year and have a positive defensive impact in the NBA. That's how good he was at Louisville a year ago. Of course, his offense lags far behind. So they're hoping they can work with him in the D League. Everybody knows the granny shot free throws that Onwuaku had at Louisville was one of everyone's favorite thing to scout on him. Just a very raw player offensively. But could he have an impact this year? It's not crazy, because his one skill that he is really NBA ready in is his defense, his ability to protect the rim. And that's something the Rockets are very short on throughout this roster. This is not a great defensive team. We know Mike D'Antoni's style. Mike D'Antoni's style works best if you can have someone to shut down that paint. And there's not that many real options. You know, Nene is what he is. He's certainly not a big-time rebounder or shot blocker. He has a tendency to get hurt. Capella, he's a decent shot blocker, but he's really not that great of a rim protector, at least based on the numbers from this past season. So I think he's someone, and of course we know the deficiencies with Ryan Anderson. Onwuaku's someone, if the defense is inexplicably poor. Now, I'll tell you, the Rockets, they don't think their defense is as bad as the press. They think with, you know, the better chemistry guys buying in, that it can be a middle-of-the-pack D. But if, let's say they get off and it's just a dreadful D, you know, 27th, 28th, everyone's mocking Mike D'Antoni, same old, same old. Onwuaku's a guy who I could see them kind of, you know, playing like a lottery ticket, saying, you know what, as raw as he is, maybe we have no choice. So that's the one scenario I could see him maybe getting some run as a rookie.
He's a guy you need to do, as you mentioned, the analytics model, love him, and that translates into fantasy stats as well. So for deeper sort of dynasty formats, Onwuaku's a guy that can block a lot of shots. He can get a lot of rebounds. His offense is limited. We saw him struggle that in that area in summer league, but he gets steals as well. And he is a guy to watch in those deeper formats. And if Nene's out, he might see him getting 12 minutes a night for a stretch of games and be useful and might chime in 1.5 blocks in very limited minutes. So he can be useful in that sort of scenario. We talked about Anderson coming across. We've mentioned Nene coming across, and I don't think Nene is going to have really much of a fantasy impact for all the reasons we've mentioned. But Eric Gordon is the other big free agency signing that the Rockets made this offseason. He's a guy that we know the injury history, broke his finger twice last season, cost him the end of the year, had lots of knee issues and arm issues and shoulder issues over the past 3 or 4 years. He comes into Houston now, and I would guess at this point he's slotting in as a sixth man, but will still play 30 minutes, in excess of 30 minutes, in combinations with both Beverly and Harden, with Beverly and with Harden as well, as in that sort of run. And running those guys is basically just a three-man backcourt. What do you make of the signing? I know that Gordon, I think he is one of the worst defensive shooting guards in the league. I think he's even a worse defensive shooting guard than what Harden is. But he comes in as a player who hits a lot of threes and does it efficiently, and he can handle the ball a bit as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting signing. I'll go out and say I think that's going to be one of the biggest surprises for the Rockets from a fantasy standpoint, and also from a winning game standpoint. I think he's going to do more for them than Ryan Anderson does, even though Ryan Anderson's getting the $80 million contract and Gordon's getting 53. I think Gordon's a little bit undervalued. He's, of course, has the injury history, but it's worth noting that what happened to him last year with his finger was completely unrelated to the chronic stuff that he's had in the past. Yep. He actually looked, I talked with a couple of New Orleans beat writers, more explosive this past year than he did when he was struggling with the knee issues. So I think there's some optimism. The question, as you said, is going to be defensively. He's absolutely worse than Harden. You probably heard me say on this podcast before, I bristle at the notion of Harden being a terrible defender. He was for stretches of this past year. He has been for certain stretches of his career. But, you know, when he wants to play and when he's in good shape, and he seems to be in great shape right now, it's nothing like last year when he had that bad ankle sprain in the offseason and came to camp out of shape. I think Harden can at least be an average defender, especially in bigger moments. Whereas Gordon, a lot of it's the injuries, that's just zapped it. And so there is going to be a question of, can you play Gordon and Harden together? Now, the thing is, a lot of people are doubting it because they're saying, you know what, who's going to pick up the point guard? Which out of Gordon and Harden can pick up, you know, your ultra-quick Russell Westbrook-type player? And so they're seeing that, well, they can't play together. I think, as I said earlier, you're going to see Harden, Gordon, and Beverly, the three of them playing together an awful lot, especially with the way Mike D'Antoni wants to play. And so if you can get Gordon out there for 30 minutes a game, which I agree is a very reasonable target, I think this is an ideal role for him. I think he's come to grips with, you know, he can't be the 25 points per game playmaker that he seemed destined to be 5 years ago, but he's a great shooter. He can play off of James Harden. He's a very smart player. And at this point, as I said, I think he knows his limitations. So to me, he's a guy in Mike D'Antoni's system. I think he ends up getting, I'd say, 18 points a night and between three and four threes. I'm very bullish on him if he stays healthy, and that's a big if. But as I said, last year, injury with Gordon was a complete fluke deal. I think Gordon and Harden are going to play really well together.
Your point about his injury being a fluke is huge to me, because people look and go, Eric Gordon's injured again. But a ball landing on your finger and breaking it has got nothing to do with chronic knee issues. It's got nothing to do with him being injury prone. Similar story with New Orleans and Jrue Holiday last year. Yeah, he missed the end of the season because he got punched in the eye. It's got nothing to do with his stress reactions. It's complete same as Derrick Rose getting punched in the head in training camp last year. Absolutely nothing to do with their injury histories. And I have an issue with guys who have continually the same issue, which is a concern with Holiday.
Yes.
It's a concern with Bradley Beal. It was a concern with Gordon's knees. But Gordon hasn't had a knee problem for a while. Last season, he missed time with a shoulder issue. It wasn't his knees. And the shoulder's fine now. And the fingers will be fine now. And yeah, there's always a risk of something happening with this guy. But it's still not like this guy is completely done. He's never going to play enough minutes. He's going to get good minutes. He'll score. He's going to hit a big chunk of threes. He gets you three assists a game. As bad as a defender is, he can still find a way to get you a steal a game. Really high free throw shooter. He's a guy that in those later rounds of drafts, around that 100 mark, he's a great guy to grab. And then you know what? If he does break his finger, or he loses a portion of his ear because he gets bitten by a dog, whatever the injury is, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You get rid of him at that point. But in a last three pick, grab him. Enjoy the 15 to 18 points or 20 points or the three triples, the three assists, the steal, the high free throw percentage. Enjoy it. And when he gets injured and he's out for a month, see you later. You haven't invested a high pick in him.
Yeah. And I would note that he's a very, he has a very high floor, because as we talked about earlier with the guard spots, there's really not much behind Harden, Beverly, and Gordon. So you know his role is going to be secure. And just strictly from a big picture basketball standpoint, I think he's a guy who's going to flourish, because at this point, he knows what his role is. I think for someone like Gordon, when you go through the injuries he did in New Orleans and his, of course, abilities as a player falling so rapidly, there's always this tendency when a guy is in that situation, he pictures who he was 2 and 3 years ago. And, you know, you can go back to 2012 when people considered Eric Gordon a quasi-franchise player, you know, someone, you know, one of the real building blocks of the Pelicans organization. I mean, he was the, you know, the focal point of the Chris Paul trade. And so I think when you're in that same situation, it's very easy to kind of struggle to accept a new role. And in this case, it's the role that his body allows him to play, you know, having been through the knee injuries and now being closer to 30. But I think now he knows what he is. He's a perfect fit, you know, as that gunner in a Mike D'Antoni system. He can be a secondary creator after James Harden, let Harden do most of the heavy lifting. So I think this is going to be a really comfortable scenario for him. And as I said, I think he's actually going to be have a bigger impact in the Rockets this year than Ryan Anderson does.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I think he's a better player than Ryan Anderson. I think there's a lot more that he can do for this team. Let's get to the big dog of this team, and that's Jim Harden. Now, he was fantastic last season from a fantasy point of view. We know the criticisms of him, but for the last 3 months of last season, people will look at the start of the season, and yes, Mikal got fired and all this stuff with the locker room and Harden lapsing, but he literally, I've never seen a player put a team on his back as much as Harden did over those last 3 months of the season.
I would agree.
Playing every minute, basically, of every game, doing literally everything, and willing this team to get into the playoffs. Now, in the end, it cost them their first round pick, but you talk about leadership. He took this team and went, you know what, guys, we are making the playoffs, and I don't care what anyone else does, but we are making the playoffs, and he did it. And that is, to me, that deserves a lot of respect for his game. And some people will say it's not the most aesthetically pleasing game, but to watch someone go out there and just go, I don't care what anyone else does, we're winning, and then actually achieving it, it's pretty impressive. And now adding D'Antoni in, he is going to be an absolute monster again.
Yeah, I think so. It's so interesting to see the perceptions of Harden because, you know, a lot of guys, they don't like his style of game. Of course, there's been a natural tendency for folks not to like the Rockets because of Dwight Howard and the narratives and all that kind of stuff. But it would have been so easy for Harden to check out. And instead of check out the way a lot of fans did, the way a lot of, I'll say even some players did, he absolutely put the team on his back. And the way he played in March and April, it was as hard as I've ever seen him play. And this was for a team that was basically fighting for a 6-7-8 seed. Everybody knew they weren't going to win a championship. They were definitely not going to fulfill the expectations that people had before the year. But he cared enough about, you know, just the game as a competitor to play that hard and did it in a team concept. You know, he distributed very well. People don't realize he's sixth in the NBA in assists. I mean, he's an excellent distributor of the ball. So just from a mentality standpoint, I couldn't be more pleased with him. He's apparently had a phenomenal offseason in great shape. And the extension, you know, yes, essentially he's just committing one more year to the Rockets and he's getting $50 million more in guaranteed money. But he absolutely did not have to do that. You know, he could have been a free agent in 2018 and gone anywhere he wanted. But him signing that extension in Houston was what the team needed him to do to make themselves attractive as a, you know, a destination franchise to other players around the league. And so I give him credit for doing it. I give him credit for, you know, the maturity to realize that that's what the franchise needed. Now, as far as his on-court impact this year and his fantasy angle, the thing that I'm really curious about with Harden is, can he be that Steve Nash playmaker for Mike D'Antoni? That to me is the big question, because
he's the point guard on this team. There's no, point guard.
No doubt he's the point guard. You've heard Mike D'Antoni say, I believe it was a podcast with The Vertical, that, you know, he could see Harden averaging 12 or 13 assists per game. Now, of course, that's a little bit of a stretch, but they're going to give him every opportunity. And I think it's completely reasonable that you could see an assist tick up from, you know, 7.5 to, you know, 9 or more. I think that's doable. The question is he going to do it enough to offset the turnovers? Now, the question is, where do you think the turnovers come from? Obviously, he had 4.6 per game a year ago that led the NBA. Are the turnovers simply because he's too careless, or are they because his teammates were so poor? And, you know, I would say there's a little bit of evidence to both. Certainly, he could stand to make a few better decisions. Sometimes he gets himself in tight spots. However, the flip side, when Corey Brewer is your three-point shooter in the corner, imagine the spacing that comes with that. Teams were able to hedge against Harden a way that they could not against almost any other playmaker in the NBA. So I do think having more weapons is going to help his efficiency. Some, will it be enough? I don't know. The thing about the Rockets, they have toyed with the idea in the past of a traditional point guard. You know, I know Gerald Morey has had some interest in, you know, you hear Ricky Rubio rumors from time to time. They did get Ty Lawson a year ago, and of course that failed completely. This season, as you said, James Harden is the point guard. It's his show. The question is, you know, long term, is he going to be good enough in that role, or are they going to need to go out and get a point guard to kind of, you know, help steady and let Harden play off the ball some? I'm optimistic. I want it to work out because really, I've seen James Harden be a great distributor. So, you know, I want to buy in, and I think he can be a, you know, a 9 assists per game player really in a Mike D'Antoni offense. But, again, there's just a little bit of caution. You want to see that he can do that while reducing the turnovers as well.
We've got him at 8.5 assists projected for this coming season, 6.5 rebounds, 30 points, 3 triples, almost 2 steals.
Yep.
He comes out in our projections as the number 2 guy, but I would take him at number 1 still, just because, you know, Curry comes out at number 1 because of his insane efficiency, but I would still take Harden as the number 1 player in fantasy drafts. Got no problem with that. He's going to put up huge numbers, and maybe we're being conservative saying 36.5, 8.5. He could be 31, 7 and 9, and that's, you know, massive numbers. And I've got complete confidence in him being able to achieve, you know, close to that.
Yeah, if I had the number 1 pick, I would pick Harden as well. I just see so much more upside with him. Yep. As we said, I think your numbers are really the base case. Assuming he's healthy, what he did a season ago, that's going to be the base. And then you put him in a Mike D'Antoni system, which is going to have significantly more shot attempts, significantly more possessions. If things really click, you know, you could see him break 8.5 assists. I know you don't want to predict it, but to me, at a base case, he's comparable to Curry and Westbrook in terms of overall fantasy value. But his upside, it's easier to see Harden having just an insane, all-time great fantasy season than it is the other guys. If someone's going to break through, it would be Harden. So to me, I'd pick him number 1. Just because I think he has the most upside.
He's definitely, look, I just received number 1 pick in a draft that we're going to be doing soon, and I'm going to be taking Harden at number 1. There's no doubt. And him and Curry are clearly, you know, a step above where Westbrook is. But I think I would, yeah, as I said, I'm going to take Harden at 1, despite the projections saying at 2. And again, the projections don't mean that this guy is ranked 1, you take him 1, this guy is ranked 2. You got to look at all things like position eligibility. Like Harden with a shooting guard eligibility is really, really valuable and can play at the 3 as well. Plus the stats that he brings, it might be harder to achieve those extra 2 assists that he gets over Curry, maybe extra 3 assists are really handy. He is definitely the guy I'm taking at 1. I'm super excited to see what he can do. And the guy barely misses any time. I don't think he missed a game at all last year. Played through some ankle problems.
Yep.
Really, really excited to see what he's going to do in this system. The sky is almost literally the limit. We're at Pat Beverley. Before they signed Eric Gordon, I was on board with Beverley being that D'Antoni, Jody Meeks guy, that he is going to be out there. He's going to bomb 3 triples a game. He's going to start scoring. He's going to start doing stuff because it's D'Antoni. How does his role look with Gordon now? Do you think that they favor a Gordon-Harden pairing for more minutes, or do you think that Beverley and his, you know, tenacious defense, which did drop off a bit last season, is going to, you know, keep him in a pretty solid 30-minute role?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a solid 30-minute role. As I said, I even if Gordon has a big year, I think there's going to be enough minutes because you're going to have the 3 of those guys playing together, and because we know the style that Mike D'Antoni wants to play. And to me, this is a team that screams out for more defense. And as we talked about to lead off the show with Ariza's decline, I don't know if it's decline so much as over usage, whatever we want to call it, but you know, if Ariza's minutes need to be cut, if he is not the defender he once was for whatever reason, then the importance of having Beverley as a ball stopper, it becomes even more important. The bottom line to me is that, especially in the Western Conference, there are too many dominant quick point guards, the likes of Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, those types of players, and I just don't think you can trust either Eric Gordon or James Harden to stop the ball. Now, you might can James Harden, but the thing is, if you're asking Harden to do that, you're going to absolutely wear him down to where he can't be as effective offensively, and I don't think Mike D'Antoni is going to do that. So I think given the caliber of point guards in the West, I think you're going to have to play Beverley 30 minutes per game because no one else is going to be able to stop the ball. And if he does that, he's a guy, you have to give Beverley all the credit in the world. He knows his role. He's not trying to, you know, be something he's not. He knows the 3-and-D, and he steadily worked on that shot to where now he's a regular 40% shooter. He's very good from distance. So is he going to step up and be more than he was? No, but I think you can absolutely mark him down as a, you know, 28 to 30 minute per game player who, of course, is going to have a positive defensive impact when you look at just big picture basketball stuff. But in terms of fantasy, yeah, he's going to get a lot of threes, especially in the system where I would expect the Rockets to shoot them as much or more than ever.
He's a guy that, you know, you're going to get 1.5 steals out of. You're probably going to get 2 triples. He's going to be a really solid rebounding point guard as well. Probably get more rebounds than assists. You know, a 4-and-4 sort of guy.
Yeah.
He's a great pick in those last sort of rounds as well, around that 100 to 110. Maybe his upside isn't as great as some other guys, but you know, and if you're dying to get some steals and to get some threes and not be really killed in terms of efficiency numbers. He's going to be there, and as you mentioned plenty of times, the backcourt depth is not huge on this team, so he's not going to be reduced to a 24-minute role or anything like that. Him and Gordon and Harden are going to have to play pretty significant minutes.
Yep.
Is there anyone on this team that you see as being a big breakout candidate? The guy I look at is Capella, just because of his increased role, and they're going to have to rely upon him to do some stuff defensively. Do you see anyone else, or is Capella the guy that you see potentially taking the biggest step forward?
Yeah, right now it's Capella. Everyone else is fairly steady. When you look at the rotation, the guys that you know are going to play, I'd say 28 or more minutes a night, Beverly and Ariza are who they are. The same with Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. Harden is the star. When you look at the rotation, the one guy that you know is going to get more minutes than he's gotten in the past is Clint Capella. So he's the obvious candidate to take a step forward. You know, you have to worry about the fouls. Can he stay on the floor enough? But even if he's at 28 minutes per game, which is what you had, I mean, that you're looking at a potential double-double guy with a couple of blocks. He's going to do it on a very high field goal percentage. You do have to worry about the free throws a little bit. But, I would expect him to be a very quality fantasy center. The other guy, like I said, to lead off this show, there's not minutes for immediately, but Monty Yunus. If or when Ryan Anderson or Nene gets nicked up, when Monty Yunus gets to a 25 minutes per game role, I think he's capable of putting up some numbers. I think a lot of people have forgotten how good he was before the back injury. And so when you look at a big who, you know, if he plays 25 minutes, probably capable of 12-6. And, you know, he's got a steadily improving 3-point shot. That's the thing that people don't realize about Monty Yunus, unless you watch him. His three got significantly better throughout his last season with the Rockets. He's worked on that even more, of course, with his limitations from his back surgery. That's one of the only things you can do. So I would say he's a guy who, you know, not only 12-6 potential if he gets 25 minutes, he's going to hit a couple of threes more than you would think. So he's just kind of a depth big to keep your eye on. He's certainly not going to play that many minutes to start the year, but if and when there are injuries, he's the other guy that I could see being an under the radar fantasy contributor.
One other thing on Capella, if you look at our projections over on Basketball Monster and the rankings, if you turn off free throw percentage, you punt that category, he jumps up to be a top 20 player. Now, you don't never draft him in that spot, but getting him in the 80s or 90s or wherever he is in the draft, and knowing that you're ignoring that free throw category, he's tremendous value, and that's only in us projecting him at 28 minutes a night. So if he gets more than that, then his value increases even further. So he is a significant late-round target if you're looking to punt that free throw category. What about a bold prediction for this team, Ben?
Bold prediction, I'm thinking. I'm going to be more optimistic. I'm going to go big picture. I'm going to say they win 50 games.
Okay.
I just don't buy the narrative. I've said this a lot on my show over on Locked On Rockets. I don't buy the narrative that 41-41 is a fair baseline. I think too many analysts look at, you know, they basically take the standings from a year ago and just use that, you know, unless there's a star that switches, well, that team's going to be close to what they did a year ago, give or take two or three games. It just doesn't work that well. This is a team that was not as, you know, the sum of their parts was not as bad as the record last year. It's just the chemistry was poor. They got off on the wrong foot. There were a lot of external pressures. McHale fired in the first month, Bickerstaff being a first-year head coach thrown in who seemed quite overmatched at times from an offensive standpoint. There were just a lot of things that caused that team to be less than the sum of its parts. When you look at James Harden, the caliber of player we were just describing, James Harden and a capable supporting cast, I would say that's 45 wins at a minimum. Harden is the kind of guy, unless he is on a laughably bad team, a James Harden squad is going to win 45 games. That's just the typical baseline, barring something extraordinary elsewhere on the roster. And now you've got a coach that, you know, they should have an upgrade in D'Antoni. They brought in a few pieces. Again, I'm not incredibly bullish on either Anderson or Gordon, but I think they're going to be upgrades on whose minutes they're filling from this past year's squad. Capella is going to be a better fit than Dwight Howard was from the standpoint of him buying into the system. I just don't see this being a, you know, 7 or 8 seed the way a lot of analysts seem to scrapping to get in the playoffs. I think that was an outlier. I kind of think the truth with the Rockets franchise, it's kind of between the last 2 years. You look at 2014, 2015, they certainly overachieved getting to 56 wins and a two seed. That was a year when everything went right from a chemistry standpoint. They found, you know, Corey Brewer and Josh Smith magically fit in perfect and brought that extra energy. So they kind of overachieved. They're not as good as that 56-win team. They're also not as bad as that 41-win team from a year ago. So they're not a contender, but I think they're a solid, you know, I'd say 50-win team, but somewhere in the middle of the pack in the Western Conference playoff mix.
I've got them projected as the fifth seed for next season. I think I've got them at 46 wins and the fifth seed. So I agree with you. I don't think they're anywhere near as bad as what they looked to be last season, and they should be in that mid range. And that's going to be a pretty tight range, that mid area. They could go anywhere from four to eight, really. But I've got them at five at the moment. Actually, we didn't touch on one player, Ben. Just a quick word on Mike Beasley, who came across at the end of last season after the Chinese season finished. He showed very little restraint in terms of jacking up shots, but he was he was effective in doing that. But with Anderson there, his role is going to have to be more limited this season.
Yeah, I'm just not very optimistic on him. They did choose to keep him, but really, of course, they were going to keep him. His contract, $1.5 million. I mean, he's a bargain. He's a bargain at that rate, so you'd be an idiot to cut him loose. However, he fit last year because after Harden, they did not have anyone that was capable of really creating their own offense. This year, with Ryan Anderson, with Eric Gordon, there's less of a need for someone just to, you know, kind of create shots off the dribble. That's going to be less of a, you know, an eyesore the way it was last year. So I think his role is a little bit less. You can't totally discount him because right now, Monty Unis is not on the roster. He is not signed yet. So right now, you're filling out a depth chart. You probably have Beasley as the backup power forward after Ryan Anderson. So if something were to happen with Monty Unis, he goes elsewhere, maybe his back flares up, you know, there's a case for Beasley to get minutes, but I would be surprised. I think, again, the importance of his kind of chucking has been reduced with the moves they made in the offseason. If Monty Unis comes back healthy, that's going to provide a lot of the backup power four minutes. And the other thing that you have to consider with Beasley, how does he fit with Mike D'Antoni? That team last year, I keep going back to J.B. Bickerstaff. I think Bickerstaff is an excellent defensive mind, but I thought he was very overmatched on the offensive end of the court. I think he was very raw. And when you have that, when the system devolved a lot of times for the Rockets last year into basically one-on-one basketball. And that served Beasley because he's someone, yeah, he can absolutely create his own shot off the dribble and, you know, get to the line, get them some points. When you look at a Mike D'Antoni system, ball movement is going to be at a premium. And Michael Beasley is just not someone in his NBA career that's shown any real ability to consistently pass the ball. And, you know, Mike Beasley just does not strike me as a Mike D'Antoni type of player. So my expectations for him are fairly minimal at this point.
I'm with you 100% on that, Ben. That's it. I think we've covered all these players on this roster. Definitely some huge optimism for this team in terms, especially from a fantasy point of view, with guys like Capella and Harden and Gordon and Beverly and Anderson, all these players that we touched on, plus, you know, some deeper guys like Onwuaku who can have a jump forward, and Deck is another name that we mentioned. So there's a lot to look forward to. I'm sure you're excited to see how the season unfolds, and you'll have that all documented over on the Locked On Rockets podcast, which again, I recommend that everyone goes and subscribes to and leave a review. A 5-star review for both of our shows would be fantastic. It really does help the show grow. So I do appreciate everyone doing that. Ben, just remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter. And anything else you want to plug to finish off the show?
Yep, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. We have a lot of updates throughout the day in terms of promoting the show as well as trying to interact with the fans. We do Twitter mailbag segments, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, if you're in Houston, you can always go to sports790.com. That's Sports Talk 790, it's the official flagship radio station of the Rockets, and I've got a page on there where I do all my reporting and just general analysis of the team from a written perspective.
Yep, so go and check out Ben's stuff over there as well. Ben, thank you for coming on. It was great to chat Rockets with you.
Yep, absolutely. Glad to be with you, Josh.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.